Badger by Owl Light.
Another pint of home brew and I made my way back to my vacuum of a room. I had just sprawled down on the bed when suddenly, silently, Esther was there.
I looked in to see if you were all right.
Why shouldn't I be?
I thought perhaps the locals might...
I told you I had police protection.
I've been thinking about what you said about Hardacre.
He's got a spy in this house.
What makes you so sure of that?
This does. Yes, it's a gun. Somebody in this house nicked it from my case. Hardacre gave it back to me tonight.
I'm not sure I care for that.
Any idea who our spy might be?
And he one of us? Could be me?
Yes, I thought of that. You tripping across the meadow with a basket of eggs, like Little Red Riding Hood. What could be more idyllic and less suspicious than that? Would you say you see him oftener than anyone else?
Yes.
But it's not your exclusive chore.
No, we've all taken a turn at it, with the possible exception of Jason, perhaps.
Ah, yes, Jason.
It's taken me 4 years to get my garden going.
So what?
4 years of back-breaking work and disappointments and starting again. 4 years. Resurrecting something that was left to die. Aching muscles and blistered hands.
So what?
And now it's all going to be destroyed by imbeciles like you running around with guns.
And imbeciles like Hardacre, who don't give a damn for your garden either.
You and Hardacre could destroy this commune.
I agree, that might even be necessary.
That mustn't be allowed to happen.
It might be avoided.
How?
I can't speak for Hardacre, of course.
All right, then, speak for yourself.
I'm looking for a character called Hugo Albert. Well, what's so funny?
Hugo Albert?
I'm still looking for Hugo Albert.
Oh, you won't find Hugo Albert here, ever.
No.
And yet...
And yet...
You've already found him.
I knew everything about Hugo Albert. Height, weight, tattoo marks, educational background and sexual proclivities, the way he parted his hair, where his parents had died, and in what air crash. Various people had variously handed over their jigsaw pieces. I knew a lot. I knew he had caused my brother's death. I knew that I had never set eyes on him. Somewhere, a million miles away, a bell began to ring. Mechanical. Insistent. Not like the bell that should have been ringing in my head. Not like that one at all. That one would have been tolling, not ringing, and I should have known for whom it told, as Esther knew immediately.
That's the telephone.
Whose wig is it to answer it?
Oh, whoever happens to be nearest it.
What are we waiting for, then? I followed her fear along the dark corridors of the too silent house. The telephone bell kept shrilling, and her anxiety had programmed itself into the sound. All right, then, answer it.
I...
Or would you rather I do?
No. Baffin House. Yes. Yes.
Who is it?
Are you hurt? Yes. Yes, I'll come in the car. Just stay put. Oh, yes, yes, I'll be as quick as I can.
Who was it?
Oh, I haven't got time to explain.
We'll take my car. You can explain on the way.
Oh, all right.
But in the car, she said nothing, and kept on saying it as we drove down the long avenue and out of the gates towards the main road that gleamed wetly in the darkness. Where are we going?
There's a telephone booth about half a mile outside the village.
Why?
Why what?
Why half a mile outside the village?
Some kind of cock-up by the post office people.
You were going to break down and tell me things.
I've changed my mind.
Scared?
It's partly that.
And partly what else?
Other people are involved.
These other people could include me.
No.
I'd just like...
Oh, for Christ's sake, don't lay any more heavy trips on me.
Right.
We're coming up to the place now. There, on the right.
There's a torch in the glove compartment. Thanks. You'd better stay put while I look around.
Okay.
The telephone booth looked forlorn, useless, aware of its own absurdity. Some of its glass had been broken by a half-hearted vandal. It seemed empty, but there was a dark pool of something just outside its door. As I walked across, the feeling came back again. Someone, something, a presence, an atmosphere, watching, wicked. I opened the door of the telephone booth, and someone behind me gasped.
I told you to stay in the bloody car!
Almost certainly, at some point in the 70s, someone had said of Simon, or he may even have thought it of himself, approvingly, "Man, that Simon is a real head." And now he was exactly that. No more, no less. A severed head beside a telephone in a booth built by mistake miles from anywhere on a country road. I phoned the police and then went back outside to Esther. She was standing there, very still, very silent. The police will be here soon. Can you hear me, Esther? Come and sit in the car. Her hand was cold and smooth as glass, and she came with me like a frightened child. I helped her into the back of the car, and she sat back in the corner and closed her eyes and sighed a strange, long sigh. I went back to the telephone booth and opened the door. It was like lifting up a coffin lid, but I managed to avoid the dead stare while I dialed a number and listened to it ring and ring and ring. Oh, come on, come on.
Balton House.
Who is that?
Come to that. Who the hell are you at this time of night?
Is that Jenny?
It is. Freezing cold and very, very cross.
Look, Jenny, something has happened. Don't ask me for details because it's sickening.
What do you want me to do?
I need someone for Esther. She's in shock.
Where are you? Are you still there, Talion?
I think you'd better make your way to the police station.
I'll do that.
Far off. In the direction of the village, two lights shone like the eyes of a cat. Then they grew and merged, and behind them came the sound of an engine, and behind that, the police. There were two of them, a sergeant and a constable, and I had a feeling I had met one of them before, and in a way I had.
Right, McAllister. Look in the telephone box.
Very good, Sergeant.
McAllister. Pull yourself together, McAllister.
I'll be all right.
Now then, let's hear from you.
My name's Peter Talion.
I seem to have heard that name before.
Shut up, McAllister. They tell me you're not averse to violence, Talion.
Only when necessary.
That thing in the telephone booth. Was that necessary?
I wouldn't know about that.
You're a bloody liar!
Don't let me have to speak to you again, McAllister.
At the same time, Talion, there might just be something in what he says.
There isn't.
Maybe you should come along with us to the station.
The sooner the better. There's a girl in the back of my car. She's in deep shock.
Who is she?
She's from Balfin House. Her name's Esther.
Have a look, McAllister.
That's all right, Sergeant. And she doesn't look too clever.
Right, McAllister. You drive her to the station.
You, Talion, you get in that car with me.
Jenny was waiting at the police station. Cool, detached, elegant, patrician. Everything that was needed. She had dug out a little man from somewhere, a doctor. He looked excavated from a deep mine of sleep, and his thin hair still bore the patterns of his pillow. Together they carried Esther away. She was still unconscious, and her skin had taken on a strange bluish tinge. I made a statement, and then it all began. Blank hours of blank questions in a blank room. The constant dripping that had worn away so many stones. You say here, do you still stand by? Is it not possible? You don't expect us to believe. Blank hours. Then I was left alone to take an inventory of an empty room. And after a while, the sergeant came back and sat down opposite me and looked at me and shook his head.
You're free to go now.
Great.
But don't go too far.
Look, I appreciate that you don't get many opportunities down here for sharpening up your interrogation.
Now, don't get smart, lad. Don't get smart.
All you had to do was wait until the girl came round.
Oh, I agree. The trouble is she didn't come round. She's dead. She died an hour after she was admitted to hospital.
I walked out of the police station into what should have been dawn, but it was more like dusk. Men don't cry, my mother said to me across a gulf of years. Remember, men don't cry. And then she would put the blackthorn stick away in the corner until the next time. Away in the corner, as if nothing had really happened. Only another little death. Nothing to cry about. Wherever you look, it's happening. A child caught in a rocket blast. An innocent bystander, suddenly a hostage, whisked from daydream into nightmare. Another little death, another little death, another little death won't do us any harm. On the way back, a tune kept dancing insistently in my head. The tune Jenny had played, Young Girls in the Garden. Now there was only one. Then the long avenue again, and the house, and on the steps a pale glimmer. And I thought irrelevantly of white peacocks as Jenny came down the steps to the car.
Did you have a bad time, Talion?
Not good.
Come and tell me all about it.
I didn't tell her all about it, just most of it as we sat in the breakfast room drinking coffee as though it was just another everyday morning.
It all seemed so, I suppose simple is the word. She just opened her eyes for a moment. Then she shook her head, as though she were saying, oh, I don't want to know any more. It's too much, too difficult. So she closed her eyes and gave up.
Cardiac failure sounds better than frightened to death.
I haven't told the others yet.
Time enough.
What a little creep Simon was.
De mortuis.
I'm afraid I don't speak Latin, Talion.
Maybe you just speak it selectively.
There was nothing between Esther and Simon, in case your mind was running on those lines.
She was obviously involved with him in some way.
Has it ever occurred to you that this is a very small commune for such an enormous house?
It did, fleetingly.
There were about 30 people here at one time, most of them politicos. Does it ever occur to you that Marx must spend eternity turning in his grave?
I haven't been to Highgate recently.
Anyway, you know the scene. Dropouts who'd never been in, sitting around all day, talking about the revolution, while the women made endless cups of coffee, looked after the children, cooked the meals, and did the washing up.
Do they try to take over?
Well, they have to, haven't they? I mean, they feel they have some sort of commitment that way.
Obviously, they didn't win.
No. Jason and I decided we preferred to be bourgeois escapists, and threw them out.
What kind of rank did you pull on them?
Money. Jason and I subsidize this place.
Where does Jason get his money from?
My dear, that's a question well-bred people never ask.
How does all that tie in with Esther?
Well, of course, the whole thing was much, much nastier than I've made it sound. And I think it was a pretty traumatic experience for her.
I think you're right. She was very involved in the commune.
Anything that threatened the commune threatened her. She was a very insecure person in every way. I think Simon made use of that insecurity to make her do things she wouldn't have done normally.
He made use of Sarah, too.
No way. Sarah used him. Sarah's big love affairs with Sarah. She just expresses it through men. Like masturbating, only with someone to talk to.
You frighten me.
I don't think so.
Something does frighten me.
I think I know what you're going to say.
I'll say it anyway. Whoever killed Simon is still on the loose. And he's around here somewhere. For once, my accident of a room seemed almost welcoming. And I dropped down on the bed, and soon I slept like the dead. Like Simon. Like Esther. I woke up to find someone watching me. He was seated on the bed across the room. He was somewhere in his 50s, and his expression held a kind of haunted strength. He had a quality of stillness, and his left leg stuck out straight and unnatural. His voice was clear and quiet.
My name is Jason.
So you are real.
What did you think I was?
I'm not sure. A figment of a group imagination, perhaps.
We have things to talk about, I believe.
No lack of them, that's for sure.
I'll let you handle the agenda.
Let's start with a ghost.
Do we have one?
I should think this house is filled with them. But the one that interests me is the one your daughter Ginny saw. She said he was singing a Jesus song and ran away when he saw her.
Your brother Jonathan was always wandering round the house at all hours of the day and night.
Did Hardiker tell you then?
I don't think I've ever spoken to Hardiker in my life. The name set me wondering. Tallien. Very unusual as a surname, but not too unusual a word in the phrase Tallien law, which means simply an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It was fairly obvious, you know.
You could be right. Why would my brother run away from Ginny? Do us a favor and tell me who he is.
All in good time. Did you know that Simon was Hardiker's son?
No.
You pick up some interesting incidental information in the pornography business.
Hardiker and Son, a family firm.
Like you and Jonathan.
You're wrong there.
That accounts for the diary, of course.
I'm not with you.
I'm sorry, I thought you would have heard about that.
Well, tell me about it now.
Well, you see, when we started here, I had this idea of keeping a kind of group diary to be entered daily, so that everyone would be kept in the general picture, know what everyone else was up to, which people were here, and which people were away.
So?
One day we discovered that several pages had been torn out.
The children, perhaps?
Well, naturally, that's what everyone thought, but the children denied it. Then one day I realized something rather sinister.
How sinister?
Well, it so happened that all the missing pages mentioned that I was in London.
I'm not going to believe they also mentioned your pornographic interests.
It was worse than that. You see, by pure coincidence, it so happened that every time I was in London, there was a bombing.
Was it pure coincidence, Jason?
Oh, yes. I think Hardiker rather liked me in the role of master bomber, with Bolfin House as the center of operations and Bolt Hole all in one.
It was Simon who tore the pages out of the diary.
Who else?
Where are those pages now?
Destroyed.
By the man you were sheltering?
Right.
Who is he, Jason?
I thought you would have guessed by now.
His name, Jason.
Jonathan Taverner.
Jonathan is dead. I identified him.
You identified a wristwatch. Hugo Albert had borrowed the watch. When you made that mistaken identification, the organization played along with it. It made Jonathan that much more valuable. I mean, the police weren't going to look for someone who was dead.
I can't take your word for it.
Then you'll have to have proof.
I can think of no better proof than talking to Jonathan.
Nor can I.
The sooner the better.
As soon as I can arrange it. I'll be back in about half an hour.
Jason?
Yes?
What happened to your leg?
It's tin. I lost the real one in a Japanese prisoner of war camp.
He went limping off. A man with all his priorities sorted out. A man developing the virtues of a new society by pandering to the vices of the old. A man who understood the meaning of the dialectic. A man called Jason. But he had gone astray on one point. The Tallien law. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But whose eye and whose tooth did I represent? The bomb that blew up Hugo Albert killed four children. The oldest was aged six. I thought about it a long time. And one day, thought was not enough, and I got a gun and came after the people behind that bomb. To hell with whatever truth they mouthed. For my truth was that no truth is worth a dead child. And if my brother rejected that, then he had to die. So I checked the gun and put it where I could get at it easily, and sat and thought of nothing till Jason appeared in the doorway.
He'll see you.
Now?
Now.
Tell me where and how to get there. I listened carefully as Jason spelled it out in detail. Then I left the room without a word, without a gesture. What was there that remained to say? Along the corridors, right angle after right angle after right angle, then across the hall, the children's toys still in their strange state of suspended animation. Through the door, down the steps where Ivor dreamed his dream ladies in their long dresses with leg of mutton sleeves, then the lawn, soft underfoot, spears of daffodils thrusting through, something stirring. The first shot tore my feet from under me, hurled my face into mud, filled the world with a prospect of pain. The second one drove me further down to somewhere I was going alone. Then there was another, far off, in another place, and someone screamed and ran and fell beside me, and his face looked startled and then empty, and I knew him from my childhood, and that his name was Jonathan. Then Hardecker bent over me, asking something, and I couldn't understand, and wept for my stupidity, and fell asleep. The hospital is quiet and orderly, good for making thoughts the same way. And I had been wondering who my brother thought he was shooting at when he saw me walk across the lawn. Who did Jason tell him I was? What threat did he invest me with? What hatred did he make me represent? I think Jason is a great man to have survived the Japanese camp. I think Jason is a great man to have taken Simon, Jonathan, and myself and made us all cancel each other out. For I'm certain now he set up Simon for Jonathan, then me for Jonathan, and finally Jonathan for Hardecker. I think Jason is a great man who loved the commune just as much as Esther, and in defense of it was ready to fight the world. The hospital is quiet and orderly. And perhaps I should be thinking of other things. I overheard the doctor tell the nurse today I had a 50-50 chance. That makes me feel a sense of privilege. A 50-50 chance. How many of us ever get odds anything as good as that?
This statement was recorded by Peter Taverner, alias Tallien, in the Dunsfern Hospital, Dunsfern, in the presence of me, Salem Hardecker, Superintendent Special Branch. Peter Taverner, alias Tallien, died at 2:28 a.m. on Saturday, 29th March, 1975. Cause of death, gunshot wounds.
That was Badger by Owlight by Edward Boyd. Peter Tallien was played by Edward Judd. The rest of the cast was Esther, Diana Olson, Sarah, Anne Kristen, Hardecker, James Cairncross, Simon, Tony Robinson, David, Andrew McRobb, Jenny, Sarah Collier, Jason, Ian Stewart, Ivor, Michael McKenzie, Ginny, Nicola Ferguson-Smith, Police Constable, Crawford Logan. Technical presentation was by Michael Edwards and Tom Anderson. The production from our Glasgow studios was by Stuart Conn.